Hi, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to the 314th episode of Awards Chatter, the Hollywood Reporter's awards podcast. I'm the host, Scott Feinberg, and my guest today is one of the most talented and exciting young actresses in the business, a 23-year-old Brit who burst onto the international scene when 2016's Lady Macbeth, a low-budget arthouse film, caught on and brought her a British Independent Film Award for Best Actress and a BAFTA EE Rising Star Award nomination, and who, as a result, landed leading roles in three films released in 2019. Stephen Merchant's Sundance sensation Fighting With My Family, Ari Aster's summer release Midsummer, and Greta Gerwig's take on Little Women, which will be released on Christmas Day. In each, she plays totally different characters, and for all, she has garnered widespread acclaim. I'm talking, of course, about Florence Pugh. Over the course of our conversation at the offices of The Hollywood Reporter, Pugh and I discussed the 2015 TV pilot that almost sent her career in a very different direction, the process of making and the unexpected impact of Lady Macbeth, what it was like being on a set with Emma Thompson in 2017 when the Me Too movement first broke out, how she has processed her incredible 2019, and what is next for her. Namely, a part opposite Scarlett Johansson in Marvel's highly anticipated Black Widow, which will be released in America on May 1st. And so, without further ado, let's go to that conversation. Florence, good to see you again. Thank you for coming in. We always begin on this podcast with just a few basics. Where were you born and raised, and what do your folks do for a living?
I was born and raised in, born in Oxford and raised some part in Spain. And what did my parents do, you say? My mom was a dancer, and then she became a dance teacher. And my dad is a restaurateur.
I read there might have been a reason for part of that time being in Spain. Is that true?
What's the reason?
Well, I mean, the way it was reported in some of the prep I was doing, it sounded like you'd been a little sick.
Oh, yes.
That reason.
I was waiting for you to be like, well, apparently you got kicked out of England. I spent a lot of my childhood ill. I have a breathing problem. My trachea is slightly disabled. And so as a kid, being in the wet weather really wasn't handy because cold season would be pretty much all year round other than 2 months in the summer. And I think one of the suggestions was, well, if you go to a dry climate, you'll be able to breathe a bit better for a bit longer.
Was that true?
Yeah, well, I think it was. But mine is like an issue within myself. It's not like I had an issue with getting sick because sickness is around.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was just weak and my breathing wasn't good. And if I got ill, it was very, very scary. So just to cut down those chances, we lived in the sunshine.
Well, everybody, and especially on a podcast, is going to notice you have this great voice. And I wonder if that might have anything. Do you think it has anything to do with the...
Most definitely.
Yeah,
you're going to hear me like grunt as well during this. My laugh is very much like it's a piggy noise. And when people first meet me, they're like, oh my God, what happened? Did you just burp? And I'm like, no, actually, I have a funky trachea.
That's a good explanation. Yeah. So I guess when and how did performing of any sort first enter the picture? Usually it's like a school play or something, right?
Yeah, it was a school play. But I think even before that, there's four of us and my older siblings. My sister's 10 years older than me and my brother's 4 years older than me. And my mum has always been a performer and my dad is loud and uses his hands. So doing that has always been a very easy, wonderful thing that our family like doing. And when I was younger, I remember even in Spain going to watch my sister in plays or my brother in plays. And I think from a very young age, I've always wanted to be as good as them.
Because and you're the youngest?
I was the youngest for seven years. And then my mum decided to pop another one out without warning everyone.
No consultation.
Which is bizarre if you think about it.
So what was the game plan prior to 17 which I'll ask you about in a minute, when things started to get serious. But prior to that, what did you actually think you were going to do with your
life? I was going to do acting or singing.
Okay.
Yeah, I am a singer-songwriter as well, although it's slightly slacked over the years. But for a while, actually, the heat of singing and guitar was bigger than acting. I think my brother entered the industry when he was 16, and he did a TV show, which was for music writers. It was called Orange Unsigned Acts. And he did that and got a deal. And then through that, he became an actor. So his way in was already a bit unique and a bit odd. And I just had no idea how you even get to act. Like, it's such a big world of many possibilities of how you get in there. So I had no idea. And my singing had been going on YouTube since I was like 9. My mum would record my guitar lessons because I would always forget the chords that I'd learned in that lesson. And she started recording them being like, well, now you're going to have to practice because I have proof.
Right.
And then she started putting them on YouTube. And I don't think she fully understood that they were there to be seen by everyone. I think she kind of put them on there as like a storage place. And I ended up picking up some traction. And I think I was early in my teens, I was 13, and I was a bit scared about the idea of doing music. And I was always worried that I was going to lose my childhood. And I think that really did scare me a little bit. So I kept on saying no and putting it off. And I always, because the heat was there, I remember thinking, well, it'll always be there, which obviously is a silly thing to think. But I was, you know, it was there and I was younger and I could do it. And I was also wanting to be at school. So I just carried on. And then when the falling came about,
this is the first, not only the first movie, but the first audition, right? Of any, for any professional thing?
Yeah, it was my first ever audition.
Well, so how does that even come about? That's crazy.
Well, I know, it's totally nuts. And still to this day, whenever I do any interviews, I'm like, it was a fluke, okay? It was a total fluke. I just happened to be in the right place at the right time. And when I was 17, there was this leaflet audition going around from London to Oxford, and all the towns in between were all given this leaflet audition because they needed to find a school's worth of girls, and they needed girls from age 13 to 18, and they were just trying to find girls, basically. Mm-hmm. So this leaflet went round, and my brother had been in the industry for probably 3-4 years since by that point. And I knew how cutthroat auditions were. I knew that it doesn't actually, it ends up being a no more often than it is a yes. I know that they don't actually want to see little people's tapes. They actually will actually give the role to someone who's big, even though they say that they want an unknown. And I just kind of, because I've just heard all of these horrors from my brother, I kind of saw it as a non thing. And then I remember everyone was talking about it. Everyone was talking about it for about a month. And I came home one day and my mum was like, have you done that tape? And I remember laughing and being like, what do you mean have I done that tape? You, of all people, know that's not how it works. And she laughed and she was like, no, I know that's not how it works. You're not going to get it. But I do think that considering you want to do this for some point in your life, why don't we just give it a go? So we did the tape, handed it in, and then come Monday, I got an email saying that the director wanted to meet me.
Now, let me just ask you this. One thing I had seen was that it got so close, just because this was like, who knows what would have happened if that first thing didn't happen. Mm. You got within 20 minutes of missing the deadline?
Literally, it was the day of the deadline. Yeah, it was a Saturday, and I'd just come back from school, and I had almost been like, why are they even doing that tape? No one's going to see it. Like, I just thought I knew. And still to this day, I think like casting is really difficult. Doing auditions is really difficult, and getting your face seen by anyone is really, really hard. So I will still say that that was like right time, right place. I met the right people and they were willing to find an unknown, like a genuine unknown.
You said that was like was it a Friday?
Yeah, it was Saturday.
A Saturday.
Literally Saturday. And then come Monday, they emailed saying the director wanted to meet you. And bear in mind, I've done no audition, like not like any professional audition ever in my life. I've only done stuff in plays,
right?
Like at school.
At school, yeah.
And then I'm suddenly prepping to go in and meet Shaheen Begg, who is one of the like most amazing top casting agents in London, and Carol Morley, who is the director.
And the experience of doing your first professional thing, it was, I guess it would be a pretty indie project, right?
Oh, I fell in love. I left school for 2 months with the promise that I was going to go back.
And you would have been in the British equivalent of like
my last year of high school. So yeah. All the exams are happening and I leave for 2 months. And my mum's like, you do realize you're not just like skiving. You have to go back afterwards. I was like, yeah, I know. And all the teachers hated me. And as you can imagine, but did it, and it was total magic, and I fell in love with film, and there was a female director, and the majority of the crew were women. Mm-hmm. And that was my first experience to filmmaking. And I remember when it came out, Carol kept on going on about how many women there were on set, and she kept on saying it in every single interview. And I remember thinking, "This, like, why are you going on about it all the time? Like, all right, there's so many women." And then I stepped on my second set, and I was like, oh, there's no women.
Right. Doesn't
now
happen.
I understand.
So the first thing, I think, right after that movie would have been actually a TV project,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So this is, it was called Studio City.
Mm-hmm.
It was going to be you with Heather Graham and Eric McCormack. Now, was that, you auditioned for a pilot, basically? Is that how that works?
Yeah, my first pilot season. So after The Falling, I went and did like 2 years of auditions, basically. And I just had to learn how to do auditions. And it's a real skill. A, keeping hold of your nerves and not having too many coffees and stop sweating, they can see.
Right.
It's terrifying. So I had to figure that out. And I did my first pilot season and I did this audition. And the word back was that they wanted to do a screen test in LA, and they would fly me over for 3 days. It would just be for 3 days, and we would do the audition on one of the days, and then you'd go straight back.
Had you been here before?
Never. Sorry. The reason why I keep on coughing is because I just ate a chocolate Eccles cake, and it's haunting me now. I'd never been to America before, never been to LA, nothing. My brother fell in love with LA. I knew that it was really big. I knew that I'd probably love it. I got here, I did not love it.
You came over by yourself?
Yeah.
At 19?
Yeah.
And what do you remember about what was here?
I was staying in the Sheraton Universal City. And I locked myself in the door. And I was like, look, I'm here for 3 days. I'm not going to, you know, screw up my jet lag. I'm just going to come here for the audition, then I'll go back. And obviously, I don't know anyone in LA, and this was actually the first time I downloaded Uber, so I didn't know how to do Uber either. And I remember I did the audition, it was great, and I was so excited to go home because I'd literally just been in this foreign city that I couldn't walk. I couldn't even walk.
Yeah,
which
it's intimidating,
for
an
English person is like, what? And I went to the airport and I checked in my bag and I was so excited. And then as I was handing my ticket over, I got a call, and I thought that they were probably going to be calling me about a receipt that I needed to hand in or something. And I picked up and they're like, hey, Flo, are you at the airport yet? And I was like, yeah. And they're like, oh, we're going to need you to come back. I was like, what? And they're like, we're going to need you to leave the airport. And I was just like, so I had to fabricate some reason as to why I couldn't get on the plane. And
well, they wanted you to come back to continue to read, or what?
To do another audition that day. They were like, wow, we want you to come and read at 2. Mm-hmm. And it was like 12, probably.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then you can go home tomorrow. So then left the airport, demanded my bags, went to do the audition. They put some makeup on me. And then I went, tried to go to the airport the next day, and then they did the same thing.
Same thing.
So I didn't leave. I stayed for 2 months.
And was this would have been on, I guess, do you know which network it was
for? I think
for?
It was going to be Fox.
Okay, so this big time, big
it
network
was huge,
show. Yeah. And they do notoriously do a lot of these, a whole circus to get the part. You finally now find out you get it?
Finally, no, I now get it. The good news is that I got it. The bad news is that I'm not allowed to go home. I've still got 3 days worth of clothes, bear in mind.
This is all in that same trip.
Yeah, this is all in that same trip. I haven't left yet. And I ended up making something that was so not me. And I think I had a bit of like a bit of an identity issue because I had fallen in love with this first film. And I thought that that's how you made movies. And here I was at the, you know, epicenter of everything any actor ever wants. And I've got this role and it's with all these A-listers and it's my role. I'm the lead of the show. And I was miserable.
Well, there's actually a pretty specific reason why you were not happy with them, right?
I was not happy because I was body shamed over and over again, which I've spoken about so many times. But I think everything that I loved about that small little indie was total opposite. And obviously we all hear the horrors of stories about Hollywood, and we all hear how women are constant and men are constantly pulled apart. And I think you just kind of put that in your head, and I didn't think that it was going to actually be that obvious.
Well, and it's also a little weird because it's not like you're, A, it's rude in any situation, but B, you're not like a big person.
No, but I think I didn't fit what they wanted. And I think I think something that when I did that project, I finished and I was not happy. And I was a bit worried that I'd spent 2 years wanting to do acting. And actually, this is what the real acting was like. And I was not up for that. And so when the show didn't go through, I remember feeling a huge relief.
And you did a pilot, right?
I did a pilot. Yeah. But it was going to go, and it really was going to.
Oh,
they
were? Really?
No, but when we were making it, it had Heather Graham, Janine Mason,
yeah.
Eric McCormack, the writer of Grey's Anatomy. Like, it was going to happen, and it didn't go. So I think it was very shocking to a lot of people, and I just remember feeling a little bit relieved because I don't think I was happy doing that kind
but
of work.
But it's not, you don't feel like it didn't go because you had pushed back on that. It just, fortunately, it didn't go.
Sadly, I didn't push back because I was 19.
Okay.
So, this was the whole kind of sad thing about it, was that I couldn't go home. I didn't know anyone out here. And this was this big job that they were just holding out to me. And the thing that they were asking me to do was to change how I looked, which if you told anyone that, they'd be like, yeah, but that's Hollywood. So I think at 19, I was very aware that this job could, I mean, they brought in girls from all over the world to audition for this part. It's not hard to make someone feel like they're replaceable. It's very, very easy in this line of work because you come out of an audition and they're sat right there.
And at the beginning of a career, I would guess, you know, that can be a life-changing thing.
It was, right?
You're going to make good money. It's
totally.
Nice opportunities.
It would have launched me, but in a different direction.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying, you know, there are tons of actors that are totally okay with doing that. And that's absolutely fine. That there's a whole industry that works off that. They work off what you look like. And they are literally selling billboards on a morsel of fat on your arm. Like, I understand that there is a part of this industry that works like that. And that is, if you can do that, that is fine. I was just hurt by it.
Yeah, of course.
And I wasn't ready for LA. And I actually swore that I wouldn't come back until I knew exactly what it was that I was representing.
And so I guess at that point, Shaheen re-enters the picture?
So the show is done. I'm now worried that this is what filmmaking and series making is actually like. And then 2 weeks later, I get this email from Shaheen saying, hi, read script below. I really think you should come in and read this. And I opened the script to Lady Macbeth.
Mm-hmm. And we should just tell, if anyone hasn't yet seen it, they should. But also, they should not make the same assumption that I believe you made, too, which
yeah.
was like, oh, shit, this is some Shakespeare I have to learn,
yeah.
right?
No,
it's not.
And it's not Shakespeare. It's Lady Macbeth of Mtsensk, which is written by Nikolai Leskov. It was a novella. And Alice Birch made the book into a screenplay. And I love Shaheen. Shaheen is she's someone that is almost my double agent. Like, she gets me things when I'm right for them, and then she'll go quiet for a year, and then she'll have a new, you know, she's someone that is very loyal. And if she has you in mind for something, she'll fight for you. I went into this audition and I didn't think it went very well. I then heard that it did go well.
Do you remember what they had you do?
Yeah, they had me just do the scene where he says, are you cold? Which, if you've seen Lady Macbeth, mm-hmm. you know it's not a very bright and happy scene. But yeah, so I did that and then came back and did a chemistry read with Cosmo and a few other actors. And I just remember feeling how alive Cosmo is and was as a person and an actor. And then I got the job. And what was so unique about what that film meant to me and about that character was it was everything that Studio City was not. And I think Will really loved the fact that I was comfortable and happy and ready. And I think being Catherine was so freeing to me. Everything about her is getting what she wants.
We should say it's like an unhappily married woman, 19th century,
yeah.
who goes off a little bit.
Yeah, she's trapped. She's forced into an arranged marriage for land, and she is given these rules. She's not allowed to leave. She's only allowed to read her prayer book, and she changes twice a day, but that's literally what she does for an entire half an hour of the film. And then her husband leaves, and she decides to play. So she finds a stable boy who looks pretty hunky, and she, I suppose, discovers sex,
yes.
which is such a big part of her story and her trajectory. And she's, whenever she's happy, she's naked or in a nightie. And I think for me, like, just the very fact that those two projects represent two very different things, and I'm allowed to be my body in one, and I'm allowed to move how I am, and I'm allowed to have my curves and my dimples and all. And you know, that film needed that. It needed someone to just be like, rah.
Well, you've said that getting the part you recognize was a risk, a gamble on the part of the people that cast you, but also you said it was terrifying, but yet listening to you just now, it doesn't sound like it was terrifying for the reasons that it would have been for a lot of people, which is that there is a decent amount of nudity and some other, you know, things that might not be for everyone. So what was the most scary part about doing that?
I will put my hands up and say that I am terrified by every role I play. Every single film I've ever done, I've been totally terrified of doing. And I love that. Catherine, A, I was scared about doing the accent. B, I didn't know if I could do any of the things that it says that I could do. I just knew that I loved the way she was, and I loved the way that she was instinctual and went and got sex, basically. I just thought that that was just so amazing to see in a young woman on screen. But yeah, I was very scared of scenes. And I mean, I don't know how many people would have watched this, but there's a certain scene at the end which is particularly horrible. And I deal with something in my own hands. And I didn't know what to expect from that. And as an actor, you read it on the page and are like, oh, yeah, I can imagine exactly how they want that. And you have no idea if you can do that. Mm-hmm. So I think that was my fear with Lady Macbeth. But to be honest, the shoot was so fast. We shot it in like 3 and a bit weeks.
Wow.
Saturdays as well. We were exhausted by the end. That it was just like a train that couldn't stop. And then suddenly it stopped and everyone was like, how many people have I killed?
Right. Well, now, you didn't have, obviously, that many points of reference yet. So how early on did you realize this actually had gone really well?
We didn't. I think when we made it, we were all there for one reason, which was the script was incredible. Will was a first-time filmmaker. All of us as actors had probably only done like a couple of things, but nothing that we could be like, hey, look at this. There was a lot of trust between all of us to make this film, and everybody was being paid peanuts, not because they were being nasty, but there was no money in the film. The film got made for it was a funded film.
Yeah.
And it was made for $250,000. And we just were so excited to be there.
And, well, I guess the undeniable proof that it went over well, it was a film festival favorite. It was a critic's favorite. Mm. You win the British Independent Film Award for Best Actress.
Yes.
You get nominated for the BAFTA Rising Star Award. That was after a little while, but I think it was a reflection of, certainly at least in part, Lady Macbeth. And I guess it then opens up a whole new audience for you, people that want to work with you, right? It was all, could you see that it directly came out of that, all the next round of offers?
Most definitely. I'd say The Falling got me Lady Macbeth, and Lady Macbeth has given me the last 2-3 years.
Was the first major, you know, kind of thing to come out of it Outlaw King? At least in terms of releases, it was, I would think, but
no. The biggest one, hang on, let me think about my timeline for a second. I think the next big one was Fighting With My Family.
Right away. So even though, I guess because that was in the camp
correct.
For a while, right?
Yeah, Fighting With My Family.
Just only because in between the releases of Lady Macbeth and Fighting With My Family, you packed it quite a bit into 2018, where we have Outlaw King, King Lear, Anthony Hopkins and Emma Thompson.
Yeah.
And The Little Drummer Girl.
Yeah.
Which was a limited series on AMC.
Yeah.
All period pieces.
Yeah.
I guess just before we go on to Fighting With My Family, I should just do a couple follow-ups on those.
Sure.
So Cordelia in King Lear with Anthony Hopkins and Emma Thompson. Emma Thompson, from what I've read, other stuff you've said, became sort of like a mentor. Right?
Yeah, most definitely.
What a part of it?
She's just a heavenly creature. I've always looked up to her as an actor, but also I think she's an amazing person. She's so intelligent. And when I worked with her, she is exactly what you fall in love with on screen. She is that big, lovable, intelligent, gorgeous woman that just wants to like talk to you and learn from you and educate you. Like it was magical.
It's funny because a lot of these articles have likened you to Kate Winslet when she was starting out, right?
Yeah.
And I think, if I remember correctly, when we had Kate Winslet on this podcast, she was saying that I think early on it was Emma Thompson who was telling her as well when people were saying you're a little too big for us or whatever, right, to go fuck themselves.
Right.
So that might, and I think you were with Emma Thompson when the Me Too stuff happened.
Most
definitely,
yeah.
So that might have, it's just the parallel is kind of interesting.
Well, it was, I have to say, it was one of the most amazing places for me to be when all of that broke out. And I was on set with Emily Watson and Emma Thompson and, I mean, so many wonderful men and women. And this horrific thing happened to Hollywood where all it came out and we needed to talk about it. And I'd never come close to anything like that. And I remember coming in one day and Emma and Emily kind of like pulled me aside and said, we're going to talk about this and we're all going to talk about this and we're going to discuss this. And actually that evening, Emma went on and did one of those amazing statements. Remember when she said that speech about this is just the tip of the iceberg or something like this. And she literally left our rehearsal and then went to go and do that, you know, amazing little paragraph that she did. And they just sat me down and spoke at me in the best way. And I had never heard half of the stories or knew how long this had gone on for. I think we all hear about, you know, old horrid, old Hollywood, but I most certainly wasn't aware of anything that was in my time in my career.
Well, it's amazing because luckily you just missed it, like just missed it.
Yeah, but equally women my age didn't just miss it, and it was still apparent when, you know, I actually started. So it was amazing to have those women talk to me about it.
Yeah. Little Drummer Girl, I guess the thing we should talk about there is that that's a pretty grueling thing to do, a 6-part limited series. I don't get the sense you're going to necessarily rush back to do that again based on things you were. I mean, you were, I think, towards the end of that, actually. And so we're saying that was after you did Fighting With My Family?
Hang on a second. Let me get this straight. Right. Making Order was The Falling, Studio City, Lady Macbeth, another film that I don't want to talk about. Fighting With My Family.
Yeah.
Then it was Outlaw King, King Lear, Little Drummer Girl, Midsummer, Little Women, Black Widow.
Wow. Okay. Well, so I think you're in progress with Little Drummer Girl when you hear about Midsummer.
Yeah.
And not necessarily itching to go do another project, having been immersed in a big one.
No, I think it was just that I knew that I'd gone back to back for a while, and I knew that I was most probably tired. I think when you're working on a film set, there's so much adrenaline and there's no time for you to be tired, and that's fine. I love that. But I suddenly started realizing and counting up on my hands that I hadn't had a break in like 2 years or something. And I was like, I should probably actually stick to what I've been saying for the past year and actually have a break and maybe have a summer and maybe just chill out for the rest of the year.
Why was that not happening? Was it sort of folks around you saying, you know, you strike while the iron's hot?
It's because of me.
Yeah.
I fall in love with scripts and then I can't imagine not doing them. So I actually now tell my agents, I'm like, don't send me anything because if I read it, I will want to do it. And that's the thing is like when I fall in love with a weird and wonderful character, I'm so upset to imagine someone else doing it.
And in this case, it's like a guy who's pretty hot coming off of Hereditary, Ari Aster, who's now sending another but very different horror movie. And so you read it and immediately say, like, what?
It was kind of worse than that. It was like I had just finished a night shoot on Little Drummer Girl, and there was actually two night shoots, but I just finished a night shoot and I got an email from my agent being like, I know you've told us that you don't want to work this summer, but we think you should take a look at this because this director is shit hot. And I remember them saying he's shit hot, and I was like, okay. Right. And they were like, have you heard of Hereditary? It's coming out round about now. Just read any of the reviews. We think you're going to want to get your hands on this script. And I'm only just now getting into the phase of acting where like I maybe don't have to tell everyone who I am and what I've done. but up until probably maybe even like this April, I had to, you know, say, oh, well, I've done this. And just after Little Drummer Girl, I remember calling my English agent and I said, how likely is it? Because a lot of times when you go in for these like long haul, trying to get the job kind of competitions, you do it for months and then they end up going for someone who's super famous and you just feel
used.
So heartbroken because, I mean, the amount of times I've given ideas over and I've been like, I feel like this. And then, of course, they cast someone who they knew was going to get the funding. So I remember calling her and I said, how likely is it that, like, are they actually considering me or is it going to be a game, mm-hmm. essentially? And she said, I think it's likely. And I was like, okay, tell them I want the script.
Right.
And then they sent me the script and I FaceTimed Ari and I think we fell in love with each other.
That gets committed to do it. But again, I'm trying to keep track of.
Sure.
So now you had already done Fighting With My Family.
Yes.
So Fighting With My Family, we're going to jump back and talk about now.
Yes.
Because, I mean, the other thing that's cool is that there's not, obviously, you've packed a lot into the last few years, but none of these things are quite like each other, which I'm sure is part of the game plan.
Yeah.
But, like, this is a hell of a different thing than anything else.
Yeah.
When you're coming from all these kind of period things to then go and play a goth girl who ends up as a professional wrestler. So can we just talk about
the pause for a second?
Let's digest that. And I remember they did kind of an early screening of that, and I don't think I had seen anything at that point, anything else you'd done, including Lady Macbeth.
Right.
And I was like, this is very interesting. And then it was even more interesting when you realize. Then you go see Lady Macbeth, and there's the contrast. But talk about this project. Just it's coming in an interesting way too, because there's the documentary that kind of was a TV documentary that was the idea. But then there's The Rock, which is like a, you know, the opposite in terms of like a high profile.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you wind up as a wrestler?
Well, Shaheen Baig casted it again.
Again, wow.
And she sent out the auditions, and this one I didn't know that I was close for, and neither did Shaheen. Mm-hmm. I think she just likes to get people in.
Yeah.
And so I went in, and I sent a tape in first, and Stephen liked what he saw. So then
Stephen Merchant, who basically co-created The Office, that's among other things.
No,
but
totally. So I went in and I did a read through with him, and he gave me some suggestions and all of that. And, you know, every time I went down those stairs or came up those stairs, there was another amazing actress on the sofa that I had loved or appreciated or
that looked. You felt you're up against.
I think like some of my most amazing heroes were there. So the pressure was on.
Yeah.
And it was like every single time I came in, I knew that I was being given another shot.
Right.
And so I really took that audition process really seriously. And I looked up the character, and I looked up Paige on YouTube, and I watched her fight. I watched her talk. I watched the documentary. I watched her family, how they spoke. I made sure that I was doing a good job, because this was a really unique and weird project.
Well,
like, so
it was
strange.
Is wrestling even a comparably big thing in
Europe,
in England?
It is a thing in England. I didn't grow up on it, so I didn't know anything about it. And I didn't know anything about the life or the industry or what it was to be a wrestler. So it was like total blank canvas for me. But I knew that the writing was incredible, and I knew that the story was incredible. And if it's going to be done by like the documentary, then my goodness,
right.
I need to work hard on this. So I remember the pressure was on for the audition, and we did it. And then finally I was doing a chemistry read with Jack Loud, and we just, like, our siblings anyway. Mm-hmm. So we'd be punching each other and like pulling each other's hair in the audition. It was just perfectly natural.
You guys had already known each other?
No. We just clicked.
That's great.
The power of chemistry.
Yeah.
And then I got the job, and I remember I sat down to have like a congratulatory breakfast with Stephen, and we were sat eating and having a chat, and he goes, well, anyway, I'm so excited because you're going to get going on the fitness and the wrestling straight away. And I was like, oh, yes,
that
of
part.
Course, that part where I have to become a wrestler, sure.
Right.
And he was like, oh, and also, how exciting is this? Basically, in February, you're going to be doing Monday Night Raw in front of like 20,000 people. And I remember going, huh?
At the Staples Center.
At the Staples Center. Yeah. He was like, yeah, yeah, we're going to go out there and we're going to do that final match. You know the final match? And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, we're going to do it in front of 20,000 people.
And at that point, you'd wrestled exactly how many times?
Zero.
Right.
Zero times. Right. And I had 2 months to get ready.
That's great. Well, I mean, that was fantastic.
Thank you.
And so then to come back to talking about Midsommar, if people did not see it yet, it was out, I think it was this summer.
Yeah, this summer.
And essentially, a grieving young woman who thinks that it might be helpful to go on a trip with her friends, except that it ends up becoming sort of a nightmare. And so this one was in Budapest, and they built the whole compound there.
Yeah.
And the thing that, you know, has been turned into a meme and clips and everything, GIFs, whatever, is your sobbing, because it is constant throughout. You know, this is a very emotionally traumatized person and goes through a lot of crazy shit in this story. Where do you go to come up with that? Like, do you think about something?
So I had a tricky time with that aspect as well. Basically, Danny Arda is the character that I played, and she suffers an immense family tragedy at the very beginning of the film, and she is grieving and in mourning for the entirety of the film. Sadly, this comes at a time where her and her relationship is already on the brink. Her boyfriend Christian, who's played by Jack Rayner, their relationship is already cracking, and then this tragedy happens. So essentially, and in a very sad way, he's stuck. And I think that's fair to say that she has no one else and he is her only person. So their relationship is stuck, definitely. Turns out that he's going on holiday this summer with all of his friends, and she feels like he's hidden that from her, which he has. Mm-hmm. And so he feels obliged to invite her to come along. I read the script and I knew exactly what was needed from that role. The whole point, the whole crux of that script and that story is that she's always on the brink of having a breakdown. And when you know the tragedy that she goes through, that's completely understandable. And your heart is breaking with her throughout the entire script. I am a big believer that if you, as an actor, you have a job, which is if you feel like the character is going to be done better and in a more authentic way by someone else, you have to let that happen and you have to give that to the character. And I've always believed that, and I've turned down jobs because of that, because I really feel like there are going to be scripts when a specific person needs to play that, and that's not me. On this occasion, I read this script, and as much as I desperately wanted to do it, I was totally terrified that I had no idea how to feel that level of grief. I'd never seen it. I'd never come close to it. I don't even know where that would come from in a person. And this is a script that entirely depends on seeing that throughout the entire film. So there was a big portion of me that was like, yes, this is amazing. And yes, this is an incredible part, but I don't know what that is. And is someone going to do it justice, essentially? So I went through that for a bit, and then I tried to imagine other people playing it and me going to watch it in the cinema, and I like almost nearly cried. So I was like, all right, okay, I do know that I can do it. I think I'm just gonna have to figure it out, and I have to be mean on myself, and I have to make sure that at no point in this performance am I faking or acting in a sense. So obviously said yes, and then I throughout that film would have to take myself away and put headphones on and listen to Olafur Arnalds and essentially just imagine every member of my family in a coffin. Jeez. Which was brutal.
Yeah, and to sustain that over 3 months.
Yeah, I mean, I know that there's lots of actors that will be like, why did you do that? Why didn't you just cry? But in all honesty, I can't just cry on cue, and I needed to find a way of doing it. I wouldn't suggest doing it anytime soon. Wow. And I probably won't do it again for a while. But I, you know, every time you hear that guttural pain, it's pain.
Yeah. Well, in the middle of all of this where you're in that mindset, You hear from Greta Gerwig?
Well, no.
No?
Even better.
Yeah.
Even more emotional. Before I go off to do Midsommar, I'm over here in LA doing TCAs for Little Drummer Girl.
Right.
And the whispers of Little Women is out. Everybody knows it's happening. Everybody's been wanting to know what Greta's going to do next. Guess what? She's got Saoirse and Timmy back. Everyone's like, oh my God, it's Little Women. Literally going nuts. And I've already said yes to Midsommar. So and the dates cross over. And we were aware of that. I even checked in with my agents. They were like, it's just.
Don't even bother.
Yes, it'd be cool to be part of that conversation, but you're not part of that conversation. So don't worry about it. I was like, all right, cool. And then when I was out here, I got Greta wanted to meet me with Amy Pascal, the producer. So I went around her house.
Did you suspect what that was about?
No, I didn't even think it was not going to work. And also the inquiry hadn't been about a specific part. It was just like, all right, we want to meet you. You're in town. So I went around the house and we chatted for hours. And then finally, like in the middle of us just chatting normally, Greta goes, well, I'm so excited to work with you. And I was like, what? And she goes, yeah, I mean, I just hope these dates will work out, but I'm so excited to work with you. And I remember being like, have the dates been sorted out? Like, is it all good now? And essentially they hadn't. And my team and Greta and Ari moved mountains to make it work. And I called them both one day. Because I was told that I had to make a choice, and I was just like, I can't imagine not doing one of these characters. Like, I really, really can't. And I'd already said yes to Ari. Mm-hmm. So I called Ari, and I was like, Ari, I'm really sorry, but can you do something for me? I need you to move the shoots by, like, 3 days. May seem small, but it's not small for a film that's already on very little budget, and it's jam-packed every single day. And then I did the same for Greta. And they did. They moved.
And the biggest thing on the Greta end of it was just that whereas the others were able to rehearse a little bit together, that you had to miss.
It was also seasons. Greta needed all 3 seasons. She needed summer, autumn, and winter.
Right.
And just a week in Boston, outskirts of Boston, changed. It changed. And so she said, I completely understand where you're coming from, but I can't, like, I need these seasons and I need all the girls in these seasons. And I understood both of what they were saying, but it was still like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Anyway, they made it work and I missed the 2 weeks of rehearsal. And every single time they messaged me, I'd send them a picture of me in my flower crown, like burning someone.
And, understandable.
Yeah, if you've seen Midsommar.
Yes, yes.
And I think Greta was very confused as to why I was wearing like a Christmas pudding for a dress.
So now, literally, Midsommar shoot ends, and how quickly?
I literally finish my last day screaming in a field with a fire going on behind me.
Right.
I wrap up. I pack my bags. 4 days later, I'm in Boston.
And I know this is a question you've gotten a lot, but just I think a listener would want to know. Little Women is like a great American classic.
Yes.
Is it something people know about in England?
Most definitely. Yeah. It's a classic.
And you had already been familiar with it yourself.
Yeah, my gran read it to me when I was younger. And I'd go stay around her house on the weekend and she'd read me a chapter at a time. And she'd make sure I didn't go to sleep at all the good bits.
And what about, was there one character that you particularly responded to in those days?
I think it's very easy to respond to Jo because it's from her perspective and she's very exciting. But I do remember finding Amy very exciting. And I remember my gran, who's a bit naughty, when she burnt the book, my gran put the book down. She goes, what a wicked, wicked girl. And I remember even though my gran was saying wicked, wicked girl, she had like this little twinkle.
Twinkle, yeah.
And I think she's just delicious and so easy to love and dislike.
And so when you had that meeting with Greta and Amy Pascal, that's when they told you this is which of the Little Women they were.
No,
thinking.
No. They went through the whole thing and they were like, so we're thinking Saoirse for Jo. I don't think they'd figured out Meg yet. I don't think they'd figured out Beth yet either. So I was like, this is going to be interesting.
Yeah.
And then
finally. Could you have seen yourself as those others?
I think if Greta Gerwig's offering you a role, yeah, you go, all right, I'll do it. I don't think you get picky.
Right, right.
And then I went back and she sent me an email and she was like, hey, love, do you mind taping yourself as young Amy and old Amy?
Mm-hmm.
Just because I want to see if you can do it. Like, can you do both ages?
Right.
So I went back and I went to go and visit my parents, and I did a scene with my mum, and I remember my mum was playing all the characters and she loved it. And I was like, "Mum, you're getting too excited." Yeah. Okay.
That's great. Yeah. And so, well, this was something that surprised me. I mean, I would think going into this, you know, the person, if there's somebody in this cast that you have, this unbelievable cast, this unbelievable ensemble that who you have dreamed your whole life of working with, that would be Meryl Streep. And yet, unless I'm reading bullshit online, that is not who it was.
No.
So
I mean, don't get me wrong, Meryl. If you're listening to this, I love you. And I have always wanted to work with you. Right. No, of course it's Meryl. Like, I mean, Meryl is one of, but everybody's looked up to her and loved her as an actress and a woman, and she's just so cool, and she represents everything that women want to see on screen. Of course, she's someone that I've always wanted to act with, but I've just been in love with Saoirse since I was about 9 years old.
So what was Lovely Bones, or what was it that...
I watched Atonement when Atonement. I was far too young. It was in the DVD player after Christmas, and I remember I watched it, and I remember I was an actor when I was younger, and I remember loving it and knowing that I wanted to do it. And whenever I'd watch films with like child actors in it, I'd always think like, what? That's so unfair. Why don't I have that role? And I remember thinking so many times like, ugh, I wish that I could do that or get to be seen for that. And I'd always then imagine that I should have played that role. And I remember with Atonement, I watched it and I was just so shocked by how amazing she was. And I remember thinking at 9 that she was the only person that could have played that.
And even documenting some wishes to work with her, right?
Yeah, I did.
A diary?
No, I just remember thinking that, I wish one day that I could just get a few lines with her, or just to watch her work.
Did you tell her this?
Yeah, I did, and she told me to shut up.
it must be weird when you're both so young and somebody tell you, I've been wanting to work with you my whole life.
I think it's also that, like, when you don't know someone, you see them as this thing, and then when you know them, they become a different person. Right, They're a completely different thing. So I had actually kind of, in a way, forgotten that I'd had those like deep yearning to want to meet her, and you know, I've always wanted to watch her work. But when I got to know her, we were just such pals, and she instantly hit me and I instantly hit her, literally, because that is our relationship. We're just basically like very physical sisters. That by the end of the job, I suddenly realized, I was doing like a happy rap card, and I suddenly realized, I was like, oh shit, I need to tell her that I have loved her since I was 9. So I wrote it in a card.
That's great.
And she found it hysterical.
That's great. Well, I mean, I guess another thing that I don't think you'd had anything quite like up to that point was having a director who's not only, you know, what is she, a few years older than you? It's not a lot older at all. And also a fellow actor. Does that make her a better director? Like, did you click more because there's the closeness in age, or because she, as a fellow actor, can direct actors better?
Yeah, I think she definitely understands how to treat an actor, most definitely. And she, I've heard from Francine Maisler, who casted it, heard that when they did, you know, auditions in the room, Greta was very clear about how she didn't want anyone on the sofa when someone came out or when someone went in. She didn't want them to do that thing, which is what so many casting experiences do. There's a line of you and you all look the same and they all look better than you. And you're like, oh, for God's sake, literally. And I think I've heard that Greta was really, really clear that she didn't want any of that to happen. So that already is like a tick and a wonderful win for actors. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she's just, there's no power. There's no like, I'm in charge and I'm the boss and you listen to me. It's a very equal relationship. And she's so weird as well, which is great. Like, she's really, really odd.
Right.
And she directs almost like she's directing music, almost like she can see music happening. So she'll come in and she won't really be looking at you. She'll be trying to hear it in her head of what you've just done in the scene. And then she'll go, okay, I've been hearing this. And she'll do something with her hands. She'll do like a movement of like a chart going up.
Oh, really?
And she goes, and I actually want to be hearing this. And then she'll do another dramatic move with her hand.
Oh, wow.
So it's very physical. It's very, musical, and the way that she directs is so like, she trusts you to do the stuff with your face. She knows that you can do that. She is just trying to create this noise and this space and this thick air. And that's what was so odd and amazing about working with her, is now that I watch those scenes back, she does everything. There's everything there that she was trying to do.
But at the same time, I think solicitous of other ideas. I mean, I heard the thing with the, you mentioned the scene of the burning of the books or the burning of the book. I think that you may have shaped that a little bit. Wasn't there something where just even the fashion of it?
Yeah, that was me.
That was your idea? This is what you should do.
I just, I love that sweet spot in children anyway. I think like that age when you're basically still a child, but you kind of look like an adult, is so hard and so tricky. And I've been in so many situations when I was like 13 where I could talk, like I knew how to talk to adults. And then I'd say like one thing like, oh my God, cookies. And they'd go, oh my God, you're so young. Right. And I think that's just like a constant thing that happens in that like age of time. And I just always loved the idea of Amy always slightly being a girl behind closed doors. And then when there's people there, she knows how to act the part and she knows how to, you know, bat her eyes and show off her new clothes. And I loved that whole, the idea of her in her fairy wings whilst Joe and Meg are leaving. And she goes, but I can come. She's clearly not ready for the theater, but she's still in that kind of like childlike phase of, no, I can go to the theater and be a grown up with wings in my back. And then, of course, funnily enough, she then goes to burn the book. And I like the fact that that is representing who she is in that moment. Yeah. She is a child and she doesn't know what's best, but she knows that she's angry. Yeah. And kids, most often than not, have tantrums because they don't know how to explain themselves. They don't know how to say that they're really bloody angry because I feel like you should have let me go to that party. Mm-hmm. But instead they throw shit and they have a tantrum. And I think you then get that skill when you grow up. So I just love the idea of her being a kid in that moment. And it's so obvious that she is a child and she's trying to desperately tell someone that she is hurt whilst looking like a kid.
Yeah. No. Well, and then just one other moment from Little Women I want to ask about is the monologue to Laurie, basically explaining the plight or the challenges of being a woman. I think, did Meryl have some influence over
that? Apparently so. I didn't realize this, but apparently Meryl sat with Greta and basically said why Little Women was important and said why it's still important now. And apparently she was basically saying to Greta, no, but you need to tell them that this is what it was like as a woman in this time. And essentially, I think Greta reduced that and put it into a speech. And on the day, this is just how like mad she is. On the day, she was like, hey, Flo, let's go through the scenes. We went through the scene and then we were all ready to shoot and someone just needed to do a lighting thing. And she's like, oh, wait, do you think, and she did like a cheeky face, if you could learn this before we go.
And I was like, this was the whole speech.
And this was the speech. She gave me this speech and I was like, You want this for today? And I'm quite a quick learner. Yeah. Like when I get into it, I'm actually not bad at memorizing stuff. But I remember even then I was like, oh my God, this is a lot. Mm. And they wanted to do it in a one-er. They didn't want to break it up. So obviously a one-er is when you do one take. And any form of one-er is really impressive. Whether it's camera work or stunt work.
Why didn't she give you that before that day? You could, she just came up with it.
I think she
day.
Knew she wanted to have it, but I think if she gave it to me, they might have told her that that was too much for a scene. So I think she wanted to give it to me on the day.
Oh my God.
But I remember doing it, and I remember it was so lengthy that, and because it was a one-er, when it came to the last two lines of it, I remember thinking, don't screw up, don't screw up, don't screw up, don't screw up, don't screw up. And there are like a couple of takes where I literally go like, economically.
Oh shit.
Where I'm like, it's almost like my mouth is going too fast for my brain and I'm like blah, 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 blah.
So do you remember how many takes there were?
I think there was probably like 4 or 5.
It's a great moment in the movie.
Thank you.
Last few things, just I think people will be excited to know if they don't already that you are joining the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You have joined the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Where are we with Black Widow. And who are you in this, and where is the production?
So I play Yelena Belova, who is Scarlett Johansson's character's, Natasha Romanoff's younger sister. Mm-hmm. Well, sisterly relationship. And we shot it this summer in London, in Budapest, in Morocco, and Atlanta. But mostly in London at Pinewood Studios. And it's set to come out next year, which is nuts.
Had you ever seen anything on that scale?
Weirdly, I had seen big stuff before. Yeah. When I did Outlaw King, that was a nice, and I actually think they're quite similar. They are similar sizes. The scale of fighting scenes in Outlaw King was unbelievable. The scale of set design and costumes was unbelievable. So I had seen that level of, well, that mass of production before.
How about CGI? Yeah, I'm assuming there's some CGI.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I'd never done that before.
So what do you like working that way?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's better when you have someone with you next to you, right. Then you can be like
rather than
doing weird
ball.
Faces together. Yeah, but so did that, and I obviously, I mean, it is huge. It's Marvel, so it's not tiny. Don't worry, guys.
Yeah.
But it was mega, and just the thing that I did get shocked by was the infinite possibilities of what could happen, just like, oh, this could happen in a scene, or this could happen in a scene, and they'd be so different from one another. And you're like, what?
Right.
Oh, that's how big Marvel is. And they really are like one of the biggest last creators, I think.
When we were getting ready to go out to do this AFI Fest panel the other day, you mentioned, I was saying, like, are you processing, are you having time to process this? And you mentioned that it's not until, I think, pretty recently that you even, like, had any kind of a pause to do that. So one of the aspects of that that I was curious about is, like, before it started getting so busy, and particularly in the last year with three movies coming out, one about to come out, have you even been around sort of in one place long enough to notice the public's familiarity with you increasing?
No. I think wonderfully me and also audiences are so keen on liking films when they go to the cinema. Like, they really want to fall in love with the characters, and they really do want to enjoy the story. And I think because of that, people see you as the character that they've seen you as. Mm-hmm. Luckily, I've been playing very different looking characters for the last 4 years of my career. So I think wonderfully people are that, like, nicely naive in a sense.
Right.
They see you as either Lady Macbeth or as, you know, but and I look completely different. And I've been in conversations with people where they've been talking about my film and they have no idea that it's me. So I've had this really nice little pocket of time where I've been able to do this work and still be this little baby and still be this person that is, like, fresh-eyed and excited to learn, and I don't have any stigma or any weight behind me or my name.
Are you excited, nervous, apprehensive about when, I mean, you do a Marvel movie, that's going to change, so.
I know it's going to change, but I also feel like, I don't feel scared by it because I feel like I've done a body of work that I'm still proud of,
yeah.
And whichever fan you are, I'm very happy that you found my work.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like I'm losing out on anything. And I also think that wonderfully every single time a project has been released, I haven't been in the country or I've been somewhere else. So I haven't been able to see the effects of press or the effects of, like, a piece in the newspaper or any of that. I've just been kind of bobbling along doing my film. So I'm sure it will happen. And my stylist said the other day, she was like, it's just going to happen one day.
Yeah.
And it's going to happen. And I was like, no, it's not. And she was like, well, it will.
Yeah.
But I don't know what that is, because I feel like every year there's been a new expansion and a new pocket of what's this realm, and oh my goodness, I have fans. And I feel like it's been a really wonderful gradual rise, and I don't feel like it has just happened overnight, which is nice. It's
a
nice
feeling. I discovered your fans when the photos that from that AFI Fest panel went up, and everybody's tagged, and then suddenly I've got Florence Pugh Brazil retweet, you know, every different incarnation of your fan base tagging me in
lovely.
Crap. So that was nice.
They're very handy. My friends check their pages out more so than mine because they're like, I now know where you are.
Yes, yes. Well, last question is just, you know, on that panel, you mentioned a Western is something you want to do, just sort of like a down and dirty type
Hell
movie,
yeah.
all that. What else? I mean, so looking forward, what's on the to-do list?
I don't know. I've never planned any part of my career. Things have just popped up when they do. And amazing scripts have just have been there. Right time, right place. I'm a big fan of saying that because I think it is. It's what you do with that moment when it happens. But I don't know what's next.
That's
I'm going to have some time off, actually,
finally.
Which my publicist is very happy about.
She nods. Yes.
I'm going to have some time off because I think I'm a bit tired.
Yes.
Which is totally allowed. And
what does some time off mean, though? I hope it's not just like a couple weeks.
Well, I have to bear in mind that I'm going to be releasing two films in the space of 5 months.
Big movies.
And they're big movies.
Yeah.
And that's going to require a lot of energy. And I just, I shouldn't be trying to be a better version of myself right now. I can just be doing me and talking about these films.
Very good.
But you're right. I would love to do a Western. My goodness. I want to go to Lone Pine and film some random Western there.
Well, that would be awesome. We hopefully have somebody listening to make this happen.
Write that script, guys.
Thank you so much. Appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for tuning in to Awards Chatter. We really appreciate you taking the time to do that, and would really appreciate you taking a minute more to subscribe to our podcast on your podcast app of choice, and to leave us a rating as well. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can reach me via Twitter at twitter.com/ScottFeinberg, and you can follow all of my coverage between episodes at thr.com/TheRace. Finally, be sure to check out all of the other shows that are part of the Hollywood Reporter's podcast network. Rebecca Ford and Rebecca Sun's Hollywood Remixed, Leslie Goldberg and Daniel Feinberg's TV's Top 5, Josh Wigler's Series Regular, Carolyn Giardina's Behind the Screen, and Seth Abramovich and Chip Pope's It Happened in Hollywood. On behalf of all of us at The Hollywood Reporter, thanks for listening.